welcome to the ATO Charlie Hoops podcast. I'm Robbie Callen. Joining me, as always, Bo Cherney. Bo, how's it going?
It's going pretty great, Robbie. Doing well. How are you?
One day, one of a juice cleanse. life's been better for your boy. And anyone that knows me...
Your body appreciates it.
My body appreciates it. It really does. Like, it's been, like, a little under 24 hours. It feels good. However... I'm a little hungry, smidge ordinary, and it's only going to get worse. So,
makes for great podcasting.
It's going to make for great podcasting. We'll see if I go off on any more rants today. Almost assured. So we'll start here at home with our Atlanta Hawks, who have clinched a playoff berth and are inching ever closer to that magic number for the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference. I think, what is it, 10 games now?
Yeah, I think it's still 10. It was 10.
Still 10.
Last night before they lost to the Philadelphia 76ers. They were resting.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's start... Let's take it back to, let's just kind of recap this last week. Started with a game against Houston that, fortuitously, James Harden decided to kick LeBron James in the balls the night before, or two nights before, and got himself suspended for a game. So he was out. They got out to a huge lead. They were leading by like 17 in the fourth. Mm-hmm. And we were all like, oh, Jesus. But to their credit, they came back. Really nice effort in the fourth quarter from them on the defensive side, and then as well as offensively. And it shows how reliant the Rockets are on Harden in the fourth quarter. I mean, because they were playing fine until the fourth quarter, and then they got to this point where they were just like, we don't know what to do.
Which was sort of amazing after you watch the first three quarters. First three quarters, they were playing brilliant.
They were cooking.
Jones was cooking inside. You had some guys hitting threes. You had Josh Smith hit a couple of threes, which is always great for the Atlanta crowd.
We're gonna talk about that in just a second.
They were moving the ball. It was pinging around, getting the open shot. The Hawks were sort of disoriented on defense in the fourth quarter. Comes and everything shut down.
And I don't know whether that's just them being used to it. You know, they're so used to, I think, in the fourth quarter, like, all right, let's give it to James and let him orchestrate, that they just got to a point where they're like, oh, and like, I don't know what to do with my hands. But, like, it all came crashing down. In fairness, the Hawks did pick up the defensive pressure. I also think some of those guys were a little tired because they were playing a little more than they're used to, especially guys like Jason Terry had a huge game, and he kind of fell off in that fourth quarter, and Corey Brewer is having a nice little outing, and he looked like he got kind of overwhelmed in the fourth. But, you know, I think when you get to the playoffs, it's going to be interesting. You know, you don't take Harden away. Like, you know, I mean, I actually think, as an on-the-ball player, I think he's the hardest guy. He's in that top, like, three or four guys. I think it's him and KD and Russ and LeBron, where it's like when they have the ball in their hands, you can't take them away. Steph's in that too. Yeah. I think those five are the five that, like, he's got his ball in his hand, you can't take him away. You can take Chris Paul away a little bit, but he's probably going to make a pass. But those five guys, you're like, okay, we're just trying to slow them down. But it's clear that if, you know, it's going to be interesting, you know, if a team can find a way to force the ball out of Harden's hands. It's clear that they just don't have anybody else that... they might have people that can, but they don't have anybody that was apparently willing to do anything in the fourth quarter.
It also helps that, or it doesn't help, that Dwight's been out. So they don't even have, you know, he's not a guy that's gonna, you know, he can post up a little bit, but be the dominant force on offense a little bit. They didn't even have that to go to. It's obviously a step down from Harden, but not even having that, it was a bunch of guys just like, all right, we did everything we could the first three quarters. Now what are we supposed to do now? Like, they kind of like used all their...
Yeah, you saw, you know, like,
Terrence
Jones kind of... I like Terrence Jones a lot as a player, and he's been great last few months. But, you know, he didn't look quite right. Millsap started pressuring him a little more, and they pressured those ball screens more. The guys talked about it after the game. I asked some of the guys, like, where they changed stuff up, and they said, yeah, we tried to attack those trying to attack the ball handler a little more and get in the passing lanes. Because, and this
they weren't focused at all in the first half. Hawks.
No, they were just.
We saw like someone asked Coach Budenholzer about that, and he was just like,
I didn't like our focus. That was all he said. It was great.
And I remember Jeff Teague on the opening tip. When the ball was tipped to him, he's like not even like paying attention. The ball just like goes straight past him.
Straight asleep. Miller
runs, picks it up, and dumps it in for two. And you're just like.
Yeah, Teague was asleep for the first half. And so. But it's definitely an interesting dynamic for the Rockets because I think that's kind of been their. I guess Achilles heel in the playoffs and in big games we've seen it is if Harden doesn't get those calls, which he's so good at, and it's been a big topic of conversation this week. I think Zach Lowe or somebody wrote something about how his free throw percentage drops slightly, but like enough where it's like two attempts a game in the playoffs, or at least it did against Portland last year. And I think it's an interesting thing is how much. And he's been really good this year. Harden's been better than he has been in the past. But it's like in the fourth quarters of a playoff game where they're going to be close. It's going to be close constantly. Can you consistently get those games put away? And it's going to be something maybe they can, but it's definitely going to be the biggest question facing the Rockets in the postseason is can they put away those games in the fourth quarter if Harden's not shooting well or if he's not getting those calls?
It's a good question. I mean, he's obviously the biggest piece of their offense. You know, he's so, like you said, good at getting the foul calls. A lot of people, you know, it's not fun to watch sometimes the way he sort of goes in there, but he's so good at, you know, sort of keeping
and
his dribble,
it's not flopping, he gets hit,
not traveling, you know, getting hit perfectly.
He puts that ball
out. Embellishes it a little bit, but he does legitimately get hit.
And
if that's, you know, playoff basketball, you get a crew that's like doesn't want to call that in the fourth quarter.
Was it the Memphis game this week that we saw it? It was the game. Yeah, I think it was the Memphis game this week, and he didn't get that last call where he got hit, and they just didn't call it. And it's like, you know, and those are going to be game by game things, but when you are so reliant on a guy that essentially is just doing dives into the lane, and that's what you're doing, and there's not really that, you rarely see the kick out, you rarely see the movement, it's really just dive in the lane. Either he makes a great play, which he does a lot, or he gets fouled, which he does a lot, but there's the 10-15% of the time, and in the playoffs, that 10-15% of the time that he doesn't make those plays, I think that gets magnified a little bit. It's going to be interesting to watch.
It's going to be, I mean, if you look at it even just from a referee's perspective, from what we saw this week, Cleveland game, refs were calling everything.
Yep.
Philly game, they were letting them play.
So it's totally game by game. Totally game by game.
What crew you get, how they're feeling, what maybe their point of emphasis had been from the lead before, you know, the start of the playoffs.
Yep.
So that's, I mean, all I can think of is they got to learn, you know, a little bit maybe how to get a little less reliant on him in the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's coaching.
I think the thing I would like to see them do is maybe run a few, like, actual sets of basketball plays, like, you know, I mean, like, the high pick and roll was their bread and butter, but maybe mix it up, because even if you do some stuff to mix it up and maybe run a couple plays that are off of that action, that same kind of high pick and roll action, they run that more than anybody in the league, and if you can maybe run a couple things off of that, it would even just throw it off for the defense, because at least you're giving them a different look.
A lot of that will change when Dwight comes back.
I think so.
Dwight's so good at just rolling to the
basket. Right. And I'd like to see them do that. Even when he's healthy, I don't think they do it quite enough. But it'll be interesting to see that. Now, the big story that came out of that Hawks-Rockets game, other than the Hawks comeback, but really the big story was Josh Smith and the Atlanta fans. And I'm going, at some point I'll write about this for HP. It's been a crazy week.
I wrote about it earlier this week for Hawks Hoop.
Yeah, and it's really, for me, it's really sad. The kind of the wearing down of the relationship between Josh Smith and Atlanta and Atlanta fans, because he was the guy. And I think, you know, it's funny, sometimes when guys leave, you look at them through rose-colored glasses. When, you know, you look at them and you're like, oh, it was so good when he was here. And other guys, it goes the opposite way, and instead of overlooking some of those flaws, I think they get overemphasized. And you kind of, and I think with Josh Smith, Atlanta fans don't remember how important he was to those teams and the good stuff he did. And I had a problem with them booing him off the jump. They booed him in intros. They booed him every time he touched the ball.
It was slow at first, but that
it started with that goddamn six-man section, which the fact that them booing him really pissed me off. I hate that section more than really anything else. Like, I like Hawks fans. I think they've been great this year, but that six-man section is like every bad cliche about like fan chants and shit. They do the ref you suck chant. They do other weird like sit down chants and like all and booing guys and the overrated chants.
I think they've calmed down with the overrated chants this year.
I think they calmed down with that after Paul George roasted the team in the playoffs. So, but they started booing him in intros and it kind of collected around. And it started growing kind of every time he touched the ball. And then obviously it hit a fever pitch. But the thing is you can hear those. And those guys are the loudest, most vocal people. So it sounds like a lot of the crowd's booing Josh. So then Josh, as kind of you, this is, I mean, like it's kind of a reaction to it and just kind of a defense mechanism, is he's not, you know, he wants to show the fans, I guess, that it's not going to get him down. So he just goes full heel turn, and I've never seen it from Josh like this.
That's what I think. It had finally worn thin on him. Like mm-hmm. he'd done it, he'd dealt with it so much.
He dealt with it a few times here. Yeah, he dealt with the groans when he played here. When he was with the Pistons, he got a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Especially when he shot a three with the Pistons, people would cheer, and he just got fed up. And he snapped, and he hit that three, and he turned to the crowd, gave him the shh and the wave. And I had never heard a boo like that in the Phillips Arena. Nobody had. I mean, we talked to guys after the game, like reporters and media folks that had been around for a while. And I mean, I've been there as long as really anybody in that media room, and I'd never heard anything like it. There was more vitriol in that response than I'd ever heard anything from an Atlanta crowd. And I think part of that is it's finally an Atlanta crowd in the arena. Mm-hmm. Usually when you have a big name, you get sparse boos, but a lot of overwhelming cheers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the opposing team always had a lot of fans. Now that's not the case, and that was just insane. And I felt, and you know, Josh egged it on, and I get that, but he wasn't the one that started that. He escalated it, but I don't blame him for it. And then I understand the frustration at the end. I understand the frustration that he gave about the fan base. I understand a lot of that.
Yeah, and here's what I said. Part of it, I think, was Josh always wanted to be the guy that brought out the fans from Atlanta.
He did. He thought he could be that
guy. Yeah, he thought he could be that guy.
He's the hometown kid.
Hawks basketball is the hometown kid. You know, he's got the Pac-Man logo tattoo on one arm, the outline of, you know, the state of Georgia on the other arm. He wanted to be that guy so much, and now not only is he getting booed like that out of the building.
But the fans are out.
But the fans are out in support of... You know,
a team that's not his.
You know, that not only not his, but, you know, he was a part of.
Well,
there were quite a few guys in this team. He was teammates with. He sees that, and he sort of...
Yeah.
Like, he was like, what was... You know, they were apparently weren't that far away. What was, you know...
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, and it's... And the other thing I think that always rubbed Josh was... Everybody said, you know, you have to have a superstar to get the fans to come out. And Josh looked at this team, and it's like, where's the fucking superstar? You know, because there's no one. I mean, this is the thing that every freaking network and every... They play up how the Hawks play a team basketball, and Josh is like, where was it? We were a playoff team. We were a 3 seed 1 year. We were... And I mean, like, from a fan's perspective, I get it. Like, y'all played... But that wasn't on Josh, necessarily. Right. That was the style they played, Joe and those guys. But... I get it. I kind of, you know, I think people are quick to just kind of trash Josh. I mean, he's been the whipping boy everywhere he's been.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he came to this team when it was in its worst.
13-win season was his rookie year. A 13-win
season. He was there for the entire build to this, and so I do think it hurts him to see them take the next step without him. Whether he could have actually been a useful part of this next step, maybe not, because of the style of play and, you know,
the importance on outside shooting.
Yeah, and so you wonder if he could have adapted, especially after being in the league for so long. I think I've had a discussion with Sekou and some other people, like, what if Josh had been coached by Bud from the jump? I think we'd be looking at a totally different player and that sort of thing. But it's a hard what if to play. But it's hard for me. A lot of Atlanta fans, and I, you know, and a lot of people who watch this team and I believe are smart basketball people, just can't, like, they just can't help but hate Josh, and I don't get it. I don't understand it. Like, if you're a fan of the Hawks and you've watched this team from what they were when he got here to what he helped build, and I mean that 2012-2013 season when Horford got hurt the first time, he was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should have been an all-star that year. There were like 2 years back-to-back that he could have been an all-star. That year I thought he should have been. He put the team on his back once Horford went out. Horford went out early.
Right.
That year. And
that was the lockout season.
Yeah. And he put that on the back, and he was great all year. Was it 12-13 or might have been 11-12?
11-12.
Yeah.
The lockout year.
And he just, I mean, he carried him. Because Jeff wasn't what Jeff is now.
Joe was.
And Joe.
A bit on his.
And Joe was. Joe was banged up a little bit too that year. And Josh was the best player on the team, and I, you know, I didn't like it from the jump. I think I tweeted it out. I was like, why are Hawks fans booing Josh Smith? What are you doing? Like, he didn't demand a trade out. He was never like that. And he said it, and I think, you know, if you actually read the full quote, and not just the headline of them being fickle, like, he was like, when I was here, I did nothing but positive things for this community.
Absolutely.
Never a negative storyline about Josh Smith. He tried to do what he could on the court. No, he didn't always give the best effort that you could see, but, you know, as an emotional guy, he was prone to looking like he wasn't playing hard more than I think a lot of guys are who can kind of cover it up. I didn't like that at all. And, you know, when Josh started playing heel, it got worse, and I wonder if that's just going to be kind of irreparable damage. At this point,
I said it was in the thing I wrote. I was like, he's done with it at that point.
That's it.
I think the fans aren't too.
The fans won't forget that one.
To forget it.
Well, especially because it got played up. You know, the fan. This wasn't a Pistons Hawks game where both teams are out of it. This is a contender versus contender where it got picked up everywhere and. It was technically national TV because it was on NBA TV, depending on how much you believe that's national TV. But I think it's irreparable damages, and at least for a while.
I think it is irreparable. There's not going to be no KG homecoming where everybody's like, Josh Smith, he's back. Mm-hmm. Yay, we get to see our guy like retire in our city or whatever. He's also not KG.
If there's one thing not many people know much about the Hawks front office, but the one thing I know for sure is that they're not the sentimental type that's going to do anything like that. As it's currently constructed.
It might if they win something, but
nope.
As of right now...
Nope, it doesn't matter. That's all I'll say about that.
It doesn't.
Which is... It's funny to say that coming off of Neek Week when he got a statue, but that was not the front office's choice. That was an ownership... Kunin deal, and the timing of it was not a coincidence with regards to other things that have happened with our front office. I'll let you figure that one out. So
leave that to elaborate.
So anyway, we get to the Neek statue unveiling and Cavs game, and fully healthy Cavs. Hawks just stepped it up. It was impressive. You know, that it's one of those things where LeBron was off and Him and JR were out. A little Gold Room Thursday action. Shout out to Gold Room. Worth about 5 wins a year for the Hawks now. I'm telling you, everybody's like, oh, the Hawks are 28-4 at home. Or is it 28-4?
It's 29-4.
29-4?
They're ridiculous.
By the way,
they've always been almost ridiculous at home. Even when
the Gold Room reopened this year in the fall. Okay? And when there's some remodels have been closed for about 2 years. I'm not saying it's a direct correlation that the Hawks' best home record. They're obviously a really good team this year. But it is not mere coincidence that one of the NBA's favorite nighttime spots, the Gold Room, reopens and the Hawks torch everyone at home. Everyone. Good teams come in. I mean, here's the thing. Honestly, the Rockets have been in. Harden wasn't suspended. He probably would have had some spaghetti legs. Because he would have been in on Magic City Monday, where it's open till 4. And we know James loves the club.
If only this were a video podcast, Robbie's facial expressions while...
Loves the club. Magic City Monday. Pop it. Hawks are great. I want to see the Hawks home record on Tuesdays. For like the last like 10 years. I need to see home record on Tuesdays post Magic City Monday. I think that was when Kyrie scored 0 last year. Could be wrong.
It was like 0 for 10. Like
it was amazing.
0 for 10 from the field. Like 0 for 4 from the line.
Amazing. I feel like it was a Tuesday. Might have been a Thursday. I don't know. But anywho, shout out to Atlanta clubs keeping Atlanta home teams winning since 1963.
This is still like, why can't we get more? You've talked about this at length before. I don't know if it was on a podcast, but why can't the Hawks get more Sunday games?
Hawks after, would be
you know, Sunday.
Hawks,
you know,
Hawks would win every
day, like 3 p.m.
The Hawks would win every if they played Sunday at 1. Like the early ABC game, they played every Sunday at 1 at home. They would have a perfect record and win every game by 20 points. Every single time. I'm the biggest proponent of Sunday afternoon Hawks games for the good of the team. Because the thing is this Hawks team doesn't go out. Like they go to dinner. And then they pack it in. Like Mike might go out a little bit, but I don't even think he's... Like, last year, Lou was the only one that really went out. EB likes to hang out with STK on an evening, but
Jeff
not...
Jeff goes home and plays Call of Duty.
Jeff plays a little Call of Duty. Jeff will go out every once in a while for, like, his birthday. But, yeah, I mean, Al's not going out. Kyle's not going out. Millsap doesn't really go out.
I don't know what Millsap does.
No one knows what Millsap does. Nobody. I assume he just kind of appears at the arena. Like, I don't even think... I just don't know. But, yeah.
He just leaves the room at the arena.
You don't have to worry about the Hawks, like, going out and getting themselves into trouble. So let the other teams do that. Because they would catch a lot of teams. A lot of teams. Like every other team slipping on a Sunday afternoon. It would be amazing.
But I'd love to see also the national broadcast, assuming, you know, Sunday's the ABC game. Just like, oh, we don't, you know, the Hawks are so good at home. It's Sunday.
We don't understand it.
Can't say it on Sunday.
Wow, there'd be a few broadcasters that would be struggling on a Sunday afternoon after an Atlanta night. Some media members too. Everybody, that would just be rock bottom for everybody involved except for the team.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cavs come in. Hawks played a great game. Jumped out on them early. Withstood the late run. LeBron didn't look good from the tip. Had one of his lowest scoring games of the year. J.R. Smith played great, which is weird because he was at the Gold Room on Thursday, but he played phenomenal. I mean, he was shooting the lights out, and his defense on Kyle Korver was incredible.
I was watching it, and I was like,
why is Kyle's 0 for 4? JR had a block on a 3 coming off of a screen, off of a quick catch and shoot. JR got through a screen and timed his jump to block a 3-pointer by Kyle Korver. He was all over him all game. He played... J.R. Smith was better than Kyle Korver in that game.
Yeah.
By a large margin. That is not normally the case. So I just want to shout J.R. Smith out.
Maybe he got out there, you know, Goldrum, once he's been in Cleveland, hasn't been able to get out a lot.
Maybe that unleashed a little something.
Getting, you know, a little taste of it spurred him out.
I think it brought the energy up for JR, actually. He, like, gained strength from going out. But, yeah, so, you know, JR was great. The Cavs just... they just didn't have it in the fourth down the stretch. Kevin Love's situation there still is weird. He had some threes in that game, but they just felt so inconsequential. Everything he does for the Cavs, it's like, he can hit like a couple threes in a game, but they're never in a situation. It's like second quarter, like okay, you know, but you, like in the fourth quarter, it's like you never hear Kevin Love's name. And he's a guy that you should. Like, you shouldn't have to just punt on your third best player in the fourth quarter. I think that's my biggest issue is it's Kyrie and Braun and shit, even Mozgov's involved, and Kevin Love's just like still has no idea what he's supposed to be doing. Just looks lost all the time. And the Cavs are doing fine, essentially without him being he's had a few games here recently where he's been really good, but like it's never a consistent game by game by game.
No.
His situation is very strange for me. I can't imagine him really wanting to re-up with the squad. Like, even if he wins a title, he might be like...
That was fun. I'm going to go get paid somewhere and be the main guy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think... I also think, you know, he seems like a guy that is pretty acutely aware of what people are saying about him.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, I just can't imagine him wanting to be the forgotten man. I just can't.
I see a lot of people comparing him to, you know, what was it, like Bosch's first year?
No.
It's nothing like that. They're not the same type of player.
Mm-mm.
At least Bosch was, you know, being a guy that could
defender
anchor a defense.
Yeah.
In,
I mean, this thing is
his, like, in his game, since he wasn't like the shooter that he, you know, became like in the next couple of years yet. It kind of helped him because they were like, okay, we have to get Bosch going, you know, on inside sometimes. Whereas with Love, it's
we can
stand in by the 3-point line, and you know, if he gets open, he'll hit it 40% of the time.
Yeah, and it's I don't like seeing him relegated to being a spot up shooter, but that's just kind of what they have out there, you know. Especially when he's paired with Mozgov, it's like, you know. Like, what's he gonna do down low? There's no space for him down there. Mozgov's just kind of eating all that up, and then LeBron and Kyrie are working off of drives and penetration. So it's like, all right, Kevin, go get him out there, buddy. Pick him, pop away. I'd like to see them use him as a roll man more when he rolls, but he always pops.
He's good around the
every time.
He's
good. Yeah. He's good. Yeah. And the thing I think people don't realize is, you know, he got a lot of offense off of offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
He's never in a position to offensive rebound because he's out by the 3-point line. You can't get putbacks from 24. You know, you can't get putbacks from 24 feet away from the hoop. So, like, if he's not in there, like, people are like, why are his rebounding numbers down? He got a bunch of offensive rebounds every game, mainly because he was playing with crappy shooters in Minnesota, but he's a really good rebounder. He's really good at positioning his body and reading the ball coming off of the basket, and if you have him in a spot where he doesn't get to do that, and I wrote about it a while back, it's like, you're taking a big part of his game away. I mean, it's a sacrifice maybe he has to make for this team, but is he going to be happy doing that?
I mean, they could kind of work with him and Pekovic
in
Minnesota, where they could both, you know, sort of work on the inside, have another guy that could offensive rebound, and Love's rebounding numbers didn't suffer when Pekovic was also out there getting...
Well, it's also a different... They didn't have attack. The thing is part of the space in the lane that you have to have... You can't have two guys down there if you're running a lot of guards plus LeBron trying to drive. You know, Kyrie and LeBron are downhill players going to the rim. You can't have two bigs clogging that up. I mean, Detroit, Brandon Jennings couldn't get to the rim. People are like, why is Brandon Jennings shooting 38% at the rim? It's like, well, everything's contested.
Well, he always shot 38%.
Well, he was always not great at the rim, but in Milwaukee he was a little better than that, I think. But when you have Monroe and Drummond down there, of course you can't shoot. Of course you can't shoot down there because there's four guys in the paint defending your shot. Of course he can't finish at the rim. He's not missing wide open layups. Not always, but like So yeah, you're not gonna clog up the lane where your two best players are going to be operating. So now Kevin Love gets forced outside, and he's not, like you said, he doesn't make the impact in enough other ways to be as good as Bosch was in that role, in that smaller role. He's a guy that when he impacts the game, he really needs to be scoring and rebounding. But
yeah, like you said, he can't. The way they're playing right now, they can't do that with him.
So we'll see. I mean, they're still really good. I mean, like, you can talk about Kevin Love's situation as it, like, the question marks that I'm bringing up are about Kevin Love's situation, whether he wants to stay there, not whether Cleveland can succeed as a team with him doing that. It's more of, will Kevin Love be happy being that kind of player? And I don't see it. Maybe he is. I don't know him. But Cleveland's team is just, they've figured things out.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense is still an issue. And I think it's going to be a problem against in Atlanta if they meet them in the playoffs. But I think I look at the rest of the East. Chicago's done, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
They're done. It's over.
The only way it was ever on for them is
if I never believed that form.
He'd never shown it. So
D Rose is out. They're not an offensive team that can do enough. And like I've said all along,
they've taken a step back this year defensively too.
Noah's taken a step back because he's not 100%. He hasn't been 100% all year, and Thibs is still trying to run him 40. And part of it's because Noah's the type of guy that wants to run 40.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, somebody brought this up on Twitter, and they're like, Bulls fans hate their players more than any team's fans. Especially of a good team. Like, and it's because Thibs runs some weird ass lineups, mainly playing Kirk Heinrich. Like, just playing him is bad. Like, he's been awful.
Terrible.
But it's like, who else on that roster are you running point?
Aaron Brooks?
Yeah.
But
who else? I mean, who are your guards?
Aaron Brooks doesn't run an offense.
He's a shooter.
Is really a
he's Nate Robb. He's Nate Robb. Yeah. You know, they both were zero. They're both short. They both shoot a lot. Like, but I mean, like, the thing is, like, people are like, oh, you know, sit Kirk Heinrich. It's like, well, no, I probably agree. Like, you should. But really, like, who are the guards on that team that are going to play enough?
In theory, you should sit.
Unless you're going to play Jimmy Butler 48 for real.
In theory, you should sit Kirk Heinrich, but there's no one else on that roster.
It's like,
especially with Rose out now.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. With Rose out, when Rose was playing, Kirk should not have been playing 15 minutes a game. That was stupid. 20 minutes a game. But now with Rose out, you're just like, well, crap. It's like the Clippers with Big Baby. Should Big Baby play in an NBA basketball game? No. As the roster is constructed, you have to.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the deal with the Bulls. I discount. They're still the 2 seed somehow. Which is more a testament to how god awful the rest of the East has been recently at the top,
Wizards
aside from Atlanta. The Zards are about to drop out of fifth.
I think they're
a game and a half.
They did,
and they lost to Milwaukee.
They did for like one.
No, they
day.
Yeah.
They were Milwaukee jumped them, but then Milwaukee lost a couple in a row.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is like Milwaukee should jump then. They're not going to drop below Miami because Miami's in seven.
Well, that's Charlotte right now in seven. Might need to refresh understandings, but Charlotte's
hang on. False calls. Oh gosh.
So, I mean, but they're 6 games back of Washington.
I got Charlotte in 9th, dude. I think you need to refresh your standings.
I just clicked on this page.
I want Basketball Reference. They got me 9th.
Basketball Reference doesn't update until.
Oh, all right. Fine.
Go to ESPN.com.
ESPN.com. Fine. All right. So just listen to Bo. Don't disregard literally like everything I'm saying.
So no, I mean, Washington's 2-8 in their last 10 games.
They lost to Minnesota. They've been horrible. Their offensive. How does Randy Whitman have a job? By the way, Wizards fans, I know they already hate their front office, but they should hate them even more. For not firing Whitman and hiring George Karl before this season, in the middle of this season,
when they had the opportunity,
any fucking time before the Kings did it,
ample opportunity.
You had most of this year to do it, and I think the worst thing that happened to the Wizards in a long term look, even this season, was getting off to the start that they did. because it gave Whitman this massive cushion, which he has quickly eaten away at and is almost done. But it's awful in Washington.
I want to see their splits because they're only 7 games above 500 now.
Yeah, no, it's not good. Here's the thing. A Washington-Chicago series would be rock bottom to watch.
So terrible.
It was kind of fun last year because Washington was playing well. It would just be NBA TV, unless Hawks-Pacers happens, which is your annual NBA TV viewing experience in the playoffs. It's Hawks-Pacers first round.
A tradition unlike any other.
God damn it. I might not show up for the first round if we play the playoffs. I might boycott the first round of the playoffs because I hate watching Hawks-Pacers basketball.
Here's the thing about Washington, too, that sort of makes it worse.
Oh, no.
Basketball Reference has them with the easiest strength of schedule so far.
God damn.
And
Whitman's lineups are so bad. Everything he does is just the worst. Anyway, poor Washington. Toronto has been weird. They still are the team. Cleveland still scares me more as a Hawks fan just because of LeBron. But the Hawks have handled Cleveland and the Cleveland defense. But Toronto, for whatever reason, gives the Hawks all manner of problems.
Mm-hmm.
They have kind of the athletes, I guess, to handle them. And Lou Williams just likes to play against Atlanta. Whatever. I'll take the blame. I still haven't taken the blame for that.
Yeah,
sorry. I went on that Lou Will rant, 3 days before he put up, 25 on the Hawks. So, my apologies. I'll eat my crow. Sorry, Lou. Still believe everything I said.
So, going back to the Wizards, though, just because I finally got a chance to open up their splits.
Oh, Jesus.
Robbie's not excited about this at all.
Not great.
They started off the season 22-9.
22-9.
So since then, they're
13-19. That's some ATL Charlie Hoops math for you.
Yeah.
Live on the air with the tech student and Robbie.
Of course I bring math to the show.
Of course he does.
Told there'd be no math.
That's why I got into writing.
This is true.
100%. It's... Oh, man. Yeah, I'm so afraid of a Hawks-Pacers first round just because it's going to be so miserable. I'd rather play Charlotte. Just from an entertainment standpoint. Literally any other team. Anyone else.
And he's so bad at Boston. Just terrible on their own to watch.
It's so bad. But anyway, let's talk about the West. The Western Conference, where it's still...
Sure.
It's starting to come together a little bit at the bottom of those standings. Phoenix, I'm pretty sure, is done.
Yeah.
They're gone. They have been... Whew!
Since that trade...
It started right before that trade.
Which is sort of why they made the trade. Mm-hmm. That locker room.
I don't blame them for any of the trades they made.
No.
They just didn't get anything for this year. But you look at them, and they're not a team that has, they're not a team where you look at them and you say, oh, they have a 2-year window. I wouldn't say they have a specific window because they got a lot of young talent.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just a fringe playoff team for the next few years, and if they can add the right pieces, they can jump themselves into second, even Western Conference Final possible contenders if they get hot. They weren't that this year anyway. They were going to be an 8 seed no matter what. You might as well not have one of the worst locker rooms in the league.
Yeah.
Freaking Isaiah Thomas may play for more teams as a featured player. Not we see role guys playing a lot of places. But he legitimately might be the type of guy that is the starting point guard or sixth man on upwards of 8 teams in his career.
He's going to be this generation's Jamal Crawford.
He's going to be everywhere.
Sort of a marquee name that can score a lot of points.
Except he's the anti-Jamal because everywhere Jamal goes, everyone loves him.
Yeah.
everywhere Isaiah goes, everyone's like, get him out. And it might not even just be Isaiah that they want out. It's like, get him and his friends out. Like, it's pretty amazing that a guy can be like that. Because media seem to like him. People that cover him seem to be pretty fond of him. Which you just might be good at playing with the media. Playing to the media.
Uh-huh.
But people seem to like him in the media. I've never really heard a whole lot. You know, nobody writes hit pieces about Isaiah Thomas. But clearly, whatever it is that he does behind closed doors doesn't work. With coaches, with... Because, you know, I mean, he used to be in the doghouse in Sacramento and not play. And people were like, why? As I always tell people, the general fan knows almost nothing. The media knows very close to nothing about what actually is happening. Yeah. We're a little more educated. We might have some sources that we can talk to within a certain team. But for the most part, no one knows what's happening. And so whenever a trade happens, whenever a signing or non-signing happens, there's always so many more layers that go so much deeper than any of us can possibly imagine. Occasionally you get a glimpse into it if you talk to the right person, and they'll give you it. But whatever goes on with Isaiah doesn't work. So he's in Boston now. We'll see how long that lasts. But
they're not a good team. So, no. But they're a young team, and they're sort of, you know, in the...
Frisky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're all about the process right now. You know, they're the building team.
Brad Stevens is a really good coach.
So they're wondering, is, you know, is he going to be there for a while?
I mean, that's the thing.
Could they be like, okay, this guy sucks for our locker room, too. We have a bunch of young guys. We don't
Right. Do we, no, do we not want him trying to poison Marcus Smart and, like, these guys who we like and we want around for a while? So that would be interesting to see this year. But I'd say Phoenix is out. New Orleans, OKC.
New Orleans, OKC could get interesting depending so much on how fun. Much Durant yeah. can play down the stretch.
Yeah, the Spurs are pulling away. I got to eat some crow. I said the Clippers were done. For as shitty of a GM as he is, Doc's a great coach. Like, that's the thing. I mean, honestly, he's it's kind of why they're a five seed. Like, he is one of the best coaches in the West, and he's one of the worst GMs in the West, which is exactly why they're a five seed. Like, he can coach them up, and they've got guys like Chris Paul, and he makes a lot of those role guys better, but he just also brought in so many shitty role guys that he can only do so much to make them better. You can only do so much when you play Big Baby that much. Or in Spencer Hawes. It's like, what? But they're like solidly the sixth seed. They're like solidly the five or six.
Blake got injured, they've
which is amazing. They're going to get Blake back, and but the thing is, even with Blake in, they're still like a four seed. So I don't know. San Antonio has turned it on some. Tony Parker seems to be kind of coming back to life a little bit after just an awful stretch.
I think Portland's going to be fine for now after a. Wes Matthews injury. They're not going to win now.
Brutal
they're
for them.
I think their title chances are done, but I think
they can still maintain. With I mean, when you have low, you have the Aflalo pickup is much bigger now.
Yeah,
and I like Aflalo a lot as a player, and he's a guy that can put. But I agree, he's not Wes Matthews. And you look at if you're a team and you have a guy like Lillard and you have a guy like Aldridge and you have decent pieces around them like they do. They're a playoff team, and they're a team that could even win in the first round. But I totally agree. I think their ceiling is second round this year without Wes. We talked about Houston ad nauseum. Golden State and Memphis are still the two best, clearly. They're both so good. Dallas is fine. San Antonio's coming along. OKC, New Orleans is going to be the most fun race of this year because it's actually fun to watch those teams play and compete for a playoff spot, whereas on the East, you have about five teams that all are kind of like, do we really want to make the playoffs or would we rather be in the lottery? Whereas you look at OKC and New Orleans, they're like, we want to be in the playoffs. And the East is like, who can tank better than the others? Because there's only seven spots that you can get in the lottery in the East. So it's like Indiana's like, oh, shit, we're in the playoffs without Paul George. Like, that's essentially where they're at. Miami's like, oh, we don't have Bosh. Oh, but we're in the playoffs. All right. Thanks, Hassan.
Charlotte's been a dumpster fire ever since Charlotte Stevenson got there. And they're like, we're still
in the playoffs.
We're still around.
Boston's like, how are we even in contention? Brooklyn's trying their hardest, and they're just terrible. That's the funniest thing, is like Brooklyn's the team that honestly wants to make the playoffs more than anyone, because it doesn't matter for a draft pick this year, and they just can't. They just keep losing, and they're in a tie for 10th, currently sitting in 11th. Keep losing, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We want that pick.
We do.
Shout out to Brooklyn for trying to suck some more for Okafor for the Hawks. Whatever. It's so dumb that the Hawks could finish with the first.
That's so dumb that the Hawks are, like, even at this point, like, the way the standings are, they could easily finish with the top 10 pick.
Oh.
Like, easily get a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
And we're talking about they still have a shot at getting, you know, jumping into the top 3.
It's so dumb. But, see, it's really a funny dichotomy. We have races for the playoffs. One is a race of sadness. And one is
two bunch of teams.
And one is two teams that are really, really good, but aren't as good as the rest of their conference. Let's talk about OKC and Russell Westbrook, because
he's got another triple double as we're recording this right now.
Does he really?
Yeah.
No shit. What's he at?
He had a through three. Fuck. I mean, look up where he's at now. They're winning right now by 6 over Toronto. He has 26. 11 rebounds, 16 assists. 9 turnovers.
Quadruple double! It's gonna happen. That man.
Four steals, too.
I've never seen a week like this that I can remember in the NBA where one player does the things that he's done. I've never seen a stretch like it. I mean, one, it's a historic stretch for anybody to have 4 straight triple-doubles. It's like, I think he became like the 4th or 5th player to do it.
I think he was the first since Jordan to do it.
First since Jordan. I don't remember enough of, like, I didn't watch nightly Jordan basketball and remember it to remember the historical significance of it.
I think it was 80s anyway, so.
It was 88, 89, so it was before I was born. But even, like, prime Jordan, I was 5, you know? And that was the second title run when he probably wasn't even prime Jordan. But it's just kind of crazy the things that he's been able to do. You know, you got KD out, and everybody's like, oh no, here we go again. And KD's missed 8 games. This hasn't been like a couple games where he's been out. This is 8 games. That's a significant, that's a tenth of your season on top of what he already missed.
Yeah.
And Russ has literally just been like, on my back. Let's fucking go. I'm going to go drop 40 every night. These aren't Jason Kidd triple doubles.
Yeah.
These aren't, you have to clarify triple doubles. There are Jason Kidd triple doubles where you go 10, 15, and 10.
The classic Lance Stevenson last year where Lance Stevenson's leading the league in triple doubles. It's like, well, he's doing it at like 14, 11, and 10. That's great,
right.
But
they're nice. Yeah. Like, you're contributing a lot. Fine. But these are like 40, 15, and 12. Yeah. Like, insane numbers. Like, he's assisting or scoring on well over 50% of their baskets in these games.
Yeah. And he had, what, the 49-point triple-double the other night?
Yeah. It's just insane. Like, every night.
Who does that? Like,
no, every time he plays, it's must-watch basketball. I'm bummed that we're not watching right now. Like, whenever he steps on the floor and he breaks his, he gets a hole put in his face. Like, literally, like, his face is broken and has a dent in it. He misses, what, 4 days? One game.
He missed one game.
And is back. And then the game back, he drops another 40-something point triple-double. And he's just running around in his mask.
What happened? He stayed in. Like, I know it was at the end of the game, but
he was just
out for a little bit. And he was like, all right, I guess I'll play, you know, the final 30 seconds.
It's like, what are you doing? Yep, you have a hole in your face.
You broke, like, an important bone in your face.
Yes.
It's like,
you broke it. Well, to be fair, I think all of the bones in the face, I'm going to say this, aside from, like, the nose, which isn't even bones, cartilage or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a bone under there. But even, aside from your nose, I think every bone in the face is pretty fucking important, dude.
I think most of your bones.
Fingers and toes.
This isn't the ATL Medical Hoops podcast. Like,
it's not. It isn't. Thank God. not qualified for that.
Anyways, broken face.
Broken face.
Missed a game. Missed one game to get it fixed.
Getting fucking
comes back.
Just getting fucking buckets.
Was on the same level he left at.
It's been one of the most incredible things that I've ever seen. Twitter's been amazing through it. Just, like, I had to watch one game purely off of Twitter, and I think every 30 seconds, it was just rush, like, all about my time. Like, let Westbrook be Westbrook. And it's just like, I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And then finally I see a stat line, like, towards the end, and I'm like, oh, that'll explain it. But, I mean, he's just doing... He's just playing at such a different level of basketball. And it's just... It's amazing to watch. And, you know, he's not really an MVP candidate, but he kind of is this year. Like, you have to kind of talk... Like, you talk about James Harden and you talk about Steph Curry, and LeBron James is in that conversation as he is every year. But, like, you literally have to be like, wow... Maybe
this guy's leading league in scoring right now. Mm-hmm. You know, putting up 8 assists a game, seven rebounds. He's only playing like 30 minutes.
Well, and here's the thing: is I think the way he's playing now, because he's taken over that scoring lead from Harden. Like, Harden got his. Like, the thing is like, I think people are gonna. It's one of those things where Harden played so well early in the year that people started looking for holes to pick in him, and I think that's what's gonna hurt him. Is like. People started being like, yeah, but look how he plays. Yeah, but he does that getting to the foul line, which is a skill, whether you believe it or not. And it's one of those things where...
Here's this YouTube video of him playing shitty defense.
Right, which he's been a lot better on defense.
He's been a lot better this season. A lot of people are going to be like...
Right, but he's still not defense.
Going to be like, well, I saw that video. He sucks at defense.
And luckily, casual fans don't vote for MVP.
Sure.
Or else Kobo would still get votes.
Well... Let's just say not always the most informed people are still voting for the MVP every year.
Just a fact.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I agree. And so I think the thing is people... I think there is an anti-Harden kind of mindset with some of the people in the media. Just because of people don't like the way he plays. He's not fun to watch people. Like, I don't really enjoy watching him all that much. I appreciate what he does, and he's a great player, but it's one of those things where it's
enjoyable,
like,
to watch.
It's just not. It doesn't have a rhythm the way Steph plays and the way Russ plays. Like, they have, like,
you know, Steph
has aesthetically
sort of a finesse rhythm.
It's like, an aesthetically pleasing style to watch. Where Russ, you're just constantly marveling at his athleticism.
Russ and LeBron have the power that, you know, everybody's in all that stuff.
Just
sort of the finesse part. Where
and Harden just you know, he's one of those guys that you're watching a game and. You're like, oh, you know, Harden.
Harden's doing well.
And then you look up.
He's like 27.
And you're like, shit, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
And so I think, and the other thing is Russ is doing this towards the end of the season, which is going to be fresh in everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. So if he gets them to the playoffs, he could. I mean, I still think Steph probably should.
I think Ethan Sherwood Strauss had a good point about this with Harden's MVP candidacy, where, like, Maury and the Rockets organization's like doing that like strong push to be like, hey, James Harden's so great, vote him for MVP.
It's
and that may rub some people the wrong way.
You know,
whereas Steve Kerr's just like, that's not my job. And everybody's you're right, it's not. Good, well, look, Steph now.
Yes.
Good job.
Yes. Good job. Good job, Stevie K. Yeah, no, I agree. So it's going to be interesting. You know, Russ is definitely in that, I think it's a 4-person conversation at this point. And Russ is. Last week has put him firmly in there.
What if New Orleans gets it? Does it become this Davis?
No, he doesn't.
Fifth guy.
Well, I mean, he'll get votes as a fifth guy, but
you don't think that's a significant part of it to be? You think it's more of those four
I think it's those four guys, just because even with what he does, I think for Brow still somehow floats a little under the radar. I feel like just from a general like. I feel like everybody's like, because a couple of his.
Everybody's aware of what he's doing almost,
well,
but
thing,
it's not, since he's on a bad
thing,
team.
The thing that's hurt
like,
him is some of his best games have been overshadowed by a Westbrook game that same night. Like
that did happen, yeah. Cause he
the night for the 49 point triple double, Brow had like 8 blocks and like 17 rebounds and almost 40 points.
Yeah.
And it was just like. That was not the lead story anywhere. That was falling in the middle of SportsCenter. That was not your lead because Russ was. I think Brow should be in that conversation. Will he be? I don't think so. Also, the NBA media tends to have this weird, you have to earn your place at the table thing.
Yeah.
And that's not just...
Yeah.
I should say, media in general has this, you have to earn this place at the table. Fuck it. It's empty. You have to earn your place at the table to be in these discussions. It's the same reason there wasn't a freshman Heisman winner for so long, even though a guy like Herschel should have won it, or Bo, or something like... You know, it's like... You haven't paid your dues. And it's like, fuck that. It's about this season. It's not about dues.
Just speaking on that, the weird thing about that Heisman with Herschel was he should have won it his freshman year. And the year he did win it, he probably shouldn't have. And it's,
The Heisman's always been, for a long time, was a borderline achievement award. But this is a basketball podcast. So Russ is just stupid. That's about where all this comes to. But too long didn't read. Russ is just stupid good.
TLDR.
100%.
Russ forever. Let Westbrook be Westbrook.
Oh, man. He's so good.
All right, so...
Anyway.
What do you want to finish on this? Do you want to get to talking about Al Horford a little bit?
Oh, Bo's got an axe to grind.
I do, and it's... With Al Horford, who's probably the best player on the Hawks, great on offense, great on defense, you know, sort of all-around player. I'm tired of people saying he's a natural power forward. He's a natural four.
Fed up.
When that's just not the way the league is anymore. I believe Al Horford would probably be great at the four if you had the right guy next to him. I don't think you'd go out and get, like, Omer a sheep next to him just for like the sake of putting Al Horford at the four. But he'd be great at the four, but he's also great at the five.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging like 18 and 9 per 36 this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's great passing big man. He does everything. He does it well at the five. I don't know why people are so obsessed with why he has to be at the four.
Yeah.
It's the same argument you get with Westbrook. Well, he's not really a true point guard. He's more of a shooting guard. It's like, it doesn't really matter what position you think they should be playing if they're excelling at the one they are put at. I don't understand. There's this, you know, push to put someone where they're not because they might be better there sometimes. Horford, when we've seen him at the four, he's been great with, you know, a little bit of, you know, Perelantich playing with him in a 4-5, but... Putting him with something like your traditional center, you know, if Horford's a natural four, apparently you're putting him with, you know, the natural five, big lumbering shot blocker. You're taking away a bunch of his space he operates with on offense. You know, just using the Omer Sheik example, since so many people wanted it last year. Omer Sheik can't catch the ball. Or you can have Al Horford, you know, we see them run, you know, so many like inside sets with like him and Millsap, you know, passing to each other. You heard that with the Sheik, he's going to fumble the ball, you know, out of bounds. You know, Sheik would get some rebounds and some putbacks, but otherwise you're just limiting Horford's space by saying, oh, great, you can operate around this area,
mm-hmm.
outside mid-range. Close to the baskets, you can't do as much because we have a guy that can't do anything.
Funk flex bombs. Omer Sheik. You're garbage. You can't step to Al Horford. You can't move in this digital space with Al Horford. Bo's dropping flex bombs.
Exactly.
No, I agree.
I can't.
I
can't stand it. It's like, well, he's actually a natural four. Well, who, like, if you put him, you know, next to Marc Gasol, sure. Like, if you put him, like, next to a super center, sure, he can play four. But I don't know if you want him at four... Like, just to put him there when I think he's been so great at the five. And then you can have so many
options. He's a three-time All-Star at center.
You have so many options you can put with him next to him at the four, whereas you can't do that at the five.
I don't understand why this is still a conversation. Like, you put Al with Paul Millsap, and they're one of the best front courts in the NBA. And yet, the conversation still lingers.
You had him with Josh Smith, who's a completely different player than Paul Millsap, and they were one of the best front courts.
It's mind-boggling that this is still a conversation. And it's one of those things where it's just like, I think If he, here's the thing, if he had played at any other college other than Florida with Joakim Noah, he would have played center in college, and this wouldn't be a conversation. But the fact that he played, and really, if you look at how Florida played,
yeah, look how they played. They played, you know,
they both worked the same. You know, he just played alongside Noah, who everybody looks at Noah and says, well, they're the same size.
Yeah, they're the same size.
They're literally the same size. Except Noah just plays a different style. Yeah. Because Al Horford shoots the ball, and because he can play away from the basket, and because he faces up and he does those sorts of things,
he's a natural power forward. He's a center because, or he's not a center for those people, because they're like, oh, centers aren't supposed to be able to shoot.
And they're
like,
oh, I'm worried about how, you know.
But it's such a mismatch for him to be able to pull the five out like that.
Yeah, no, and the thing is like, he doesn't struggle with it defensively.
No.
Like, he's a phenomenal defensive player. Are there certain guys that are bigger than him, and if they get in position, can take advantage of him? Yes. But DeMarcus Cousins and Marc Gasol take advantage of every defensive center in the NBA.
The big case still was, well, how are we going to play against Dwight Howard? It's like, if you get a big guy, how are you going to play against Dwight Howard? Like, it's not, like, Dwight Howard's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, okay, is he Roy Hibbert? No, but he roasts Roy Hibbert every time he plays him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he draws Roy out, and he shoots over him. And he plays him in space, and fronts, and faces up on him. And he does all these things. Yeah. He gets under him, and he does all these things. And it's so dumb. The Al Horford four talk has to end. One, it's dumb that at this day in age, it's 2015, why are we still really talking about positions in that regard? He is a natural power forward.
We just saw the Miami Heat win back-to-back titles a couple of years ago.
Bosh!
Yeah. But, and not even that, but they were, you know, they
no,
were like,
they didn't play
they so much emphasis LeBron on, like, played, their sort of position.
Right.
Like, LeBron was the point.
Right. And
you see that this year with Chalmers and Cole helping.
And you know, it's really funny that you bring that up, because for a lot of even former NBA players, like, a lot of them, the smarter ones, like, even like even Jalen Rose has gone in on this, where he's like, positionality's dead. Like, he's like, look, you have wings, you have a point, like, point guard, and even point guard,
yeah,
they're the
you
lines
have your
blurring.
Ball handler.
You have, you're right, you have your ball handlers, you have your wing players, and you have front court players. And if you ask, and like, I asked Bud about this when he started, and that's how he said, we have a point guard, we have two wings, and we have two front court players. He's like, I don't worry about who's playing the two and who's playing the three. Because, you know, when you asked him about Kyle and Damari, it's like, it's really a matchup thing. You know, Damari's just a little bit bigger defender to defend the threes, and Kyle moves his feet better to defend twos. But you could foot the two. Like, if they get in a switch, they're okay. Like, they're in good shape. The same goes with Millsap and Horford in the front court. It's like, Al's going to defend the center most of the time, but if they get caught in a switch, Millsap's fine there, and Al's fine defending the four.
And LeBron even made this point after the game on Friday, that it's like, there's so few teams that have two guys like them that can move their feet that well and essentially guard both spots and
pretty much
everybody on the floor.
Yeah, and so it's just, it's a stupid conversation just in general to really try to be like, he's a four and not a five. When most teams, especially the Hawks, it doesn't matter. You know, I think it was a bigger conversation with Woody, because Woody was a more traditional coach with, as far as roles go. But even defensively, Woody was a proponent of switching everything.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter. Like, the thing is back when Woody was around, and I think this is why Tyson Chandler didn't work as well under Woody, is Woody wants to switch everything. Yeah. And so you end up with your five outside. I'd rather have Al Horford out there than most other centers. And like I said, he's a three-time All-Star at center. He puts up crazy numbers. He's a great defender. He had, what, three blocks in the first, like, 2 minutes against Philly? Like, he's long. He's got crazy long arms. So it's not like he's like, he doesn't have Elton Brand long arms, but he's also an inch and a half taller than Elton.
And here's so the thing, like, he has a higher standing reach than Joakim Noah. I remember looking that up once because everybody's so adamant that Noah's this, oh a center God. And Al's just a natural four, but Al can, like,
right.
Al can outreach him.
Right. Al can outreach him. Al can outjump him. Yeah. It's just Joakim plays a different style.
Yeah. He plays
Joakim
more plays, gritty style that he plays people the, associate more with your traditional
he's,
center.
He's more physical and aggressive, whereas Al gets tagged as finesse because he plays outside more. But that's just because.
Just why wouldn't he plays you? Offense, yeah.
Why wouldn't you have Al Horford playing in the mid range when he's the best mid range shooter in the NBA, as a big man? Percentage wise,
yeah,
he's top two guy among big men. Like
for the past like 4 or 5 years, he's been up there
forever. Yeah. Like since he's been in the league, he's just wet from 15. Like that baseline jumper's money. The elbow jumper's good. Yeah, no, I'm tired of it too. But you get it apparently more than I do. I think I just ignore people better than you do.
That's a possibility.
But no, I agree.
I think I might. No, I don't.
That's been Bo.
Yeah, that's been my axe to grind. I know Robbie's been on a lot of
hitting you with those rants on here. Hitting you with those flex bombs.
That was my rant. I've been sort of
fed up
with.
He's been fed up with this for years. Folks, so don't come with that weak stuff talking about who's a center.
That's what the point, like, I also wanted to get that out. It's like, I think he could play four very well because he's Al Horford's a great fucking player, but I hate sometimes, like, oh, Al Horford just had some good sets, he's playing at the four right now. And I'm just like,
I think this came up yesterday because Muscala was starting, and they were like, "Oh, Al Horford finally at the four," and I'm like, "No, he just played." Moose is weird too.
Moose is the essentially Styles same style.
Moose is weird too. Like, he tries to shoot threes and shit, and they don't always go in, but he occasionally makes them. I love this guy, and he's crazy long, and he's a really good rim protector, but he doesn't do most of the other things that you need him to do, and it's like, he's getting there, and he plays pretty well, and he's an NBA guy. I'm not going to ever disparage Muskie, that's my guy, but yeah, it's like, what are you talking about, Al Horford can't play center?
It's like, oh, some guy bigger than him is playing.
It's like Russell Westbrook not being a point guard. Yeah. It's like, please, there's the door. Hopefully there's a cliff on the other side of that door. Jump off of it.
He's like third or fourth in assists. I can't, but...
I'm fed up.
Assist for you.
Stop talking about this guy's a shooting guard. Fuck it, he's a basketball player. That's what I want. I want basketball players.
Hopefully they can play both ends.
If you can play both ends of the floor, you can find a place. Like, what's Dirk? He's a four, but he's always outside. Shoot, like, Dirk's, who cares? But Dirk's one of the best players in the league. And it's like Kevin Love is having this thing where he's like, I don't want to be known as a stretch four. It's like, motherfucker, you shoot like six threes a game. Fuck out of here. You are a stretch four. And you're very good at it. But I think that, and going back to our initial conversation, I love again with how he's hyper aware of what people are saying about him. He doesn't like being called a stretch four. No, he doesn't want to be standing out there and shooting fucking threes all day because he thinks that damages his personal brand or some shit. I don't know. But
so, guess we're on Russell Westbrook report
please.
Too. Russell Westbrook's first player with 30 points, 11 rebounds, 17 assists in a game since Magic Johnson in 1988.
Is that good?
It's not bad.
Is that good?
Yeah. Let's see what he finished with, though, because it just had, like, the plus numbers on there. But yeah, he finished with 30, 11, and 17.
That's okay.
That's not bad. I can do that on 2K. It's no big deal.
I can't. I fucking hate 2K. I'll say it. I hate 2K. I can't do it.
You can't do the.
It's
just like.
It's not that. Here's the thing. It's like, I get fed up playing 2K way too much. Like, there's two... Like, most sports games, you know, I can kind of control everybody, but, like, 2K, it's like... I think it's because... Mainly because, like...
Are you talking about my player mode? Or just
well, both. Well, my player. Oh, Jesus Christ. But most... Like, even when I'm playing with the team, like, I'm pretty good and fine at playing, but it's like, I don't... I get mad because I'm like, no, you don't cut, goddammit. And it's like, they won't do it. And I'm like, no, I want a screen. I remember the first time I got 2K, I didn't... Of course, I didn't really check the manual, but I couldn't figure out what the screen button was because it was different than, like, live or whatever. And so I would just, like, turn the game off because I would be trying to, like, call for a screen as the ball handler and nobody would come. And I was just like, this is fucking bullshit. I just want to run pick and rolls. Like, so, yeah, I don't even play 2K anymore. I just play FIFA. Give me FIFA. I don't even play Madden. I just get mad.
The ATL Footy Hoops podcast?
Footy Hoops. Yeah. But, oh, man. Yeah, so stop talking about Al Horford as a power forward. Al Horford's one of the best basketball players in the league. Be happy that he's on the Hawks. Hawks fans, and if you're not a Hawks fan, then
shut up.
Well, shut up, or just be sad that Al Horford's not on your team because you'd love to have him playing center for your team. Unless you're like maybe the Grizz. Like, I think somebody asked it the other. I think Brad asked it the other night. He's like, name the centers better than Al Horford. I was like, Marc Gasol. That's all I got. DeMarcus Cousins could be on that list depending on what you value. But from an overall standpoint, if I were taking a team, I would take Al Horford over DeMarcus Cousins. A lot of people wouldn't, but like, I also value chemistry. And Al Horford is not going to cause any problems. And like, I think some of DeMarcus's issues are overblown, but there's something there. If there's smoke, there's fire. Might not be a big fire, but there's something burning.
Also doesn't help have it taking the guy that's not going to foul out in 30 minutes.
Also not going to foul out. Also a better defender. Like, DeMarcus, good defender when he tries, but he also has those, you know, moments.
Yeah.
But I like Al more than most any center in the league outside of, like, Marc Gasol, who's the best center in the league. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, there you go. That's it.
But Al's a natural four. Let's forget.
But he's a natural four.
He's easily top five.
But that's the thing. If you put him at the four, honestly, he's the second best center in the league for me. He's definitely top three or four, no matter who you're talking about. But you put him at the four, and you put him in that class, all of a sudden, like, top five, maybe? Like, I mean, you look
at... Who else do you put at the four, then, in that case, too? It's like...
Is Bosh a four?
Is Bosh a four?
Is LeBron a four? Like, if you're trying to... Yeah... Please. I remember ESPN used to always have Josh Smith listed as a small forward. It pissed me off to no end.
I love...
For, like, every season he was in Atlanta. And I was like, he literally has not played the three until it was, like, last year.
I think he played it his first year.
A little bit. And then it was
like, that's just because we had, like, eight power forwards on the roster.
Well, shout out to Billy for that drafting.
But also, BK. If you look at, like, what they have right now, they have, on ESPN, they have Perovic as a power forward.
No! Never good God!
Never plays there.
By the way, I'm about out on Para.
And Elton is a power forward, which I sort of understand, but he never plays there.
Anymore. I like Para, but that boy's got to stop shooting.
They got to start making.
No, can we talk about Kyle? What's going on with Kyle?
We're not on a time limit here. Keep going.
So, I'm a little worried about Kyle. I shouldn't be. But I don't know what happened in New York. But it wasn't good. Because he's been downright average. And I don't like that. I mean, here's the thing. He's still a positive impact on the squad.
Yeah.
When he's on the floor. Like, he still makes the right defensive moves. And he's still getting his hands and things. But I liked it a lot better when he was hitting open shots. And I can tell that he's... feeling it too. I mean, he hit that second three, and I'd never seen that much emotion out of Kyle. The second three against the Cavs, I've never seen that much emotion after like a third quarter shot. Like, he's like, like pumping his fist and screaming. And
that
I was like,
fourth quarter, was it?
Was it fourth? I thought it was late third.
I thought it was early fourth.
It might have been early fourth. It might have been early. It was after they were up 17, you're right. But it was just like, I mean, there was a big shot, but okay. You know, it's a little worrisome. But
he's shooting like 33% since the break. From
yeah, it's super, super.
I
average.
Mean, that's the thing with Kyle. When I thought he's like, okay, he could sustain this for the whole season, was like, well, he's taking open shots. The Hawks' offense is predicated on getting
open shots. He's shot forcing some things.
But you know, when you see him miss like a couple of like open shots, like three open threes, where you're like,
what?
Okay, like where like
what the fuck?
Yeah.
And the thing, and you know, Kyle's got a little gunner in him. And he just gets mad.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, he'll be like, okay, I'm just going to take this one. And it's like, that might not be your... That might not be your go-to, Kyle. Like, he'll pull up from, like, 26 off a handoff.
The other day, he had the pull-up against that he made it, but it was still...
Oh, it was amazing. yeah, he got, like, a steal and just pull up, and I fell out. Like, I couldn't handle it. I was like, Kyle Korver just hit a pull-up three in transition. Like, he dribbled
the whole way.
All the way up.
The 3-point line.
I was like, just hoisted. Yeah. And he could have tossed one to Baze. I was like, all right, do you. But yeah, Kyle's a little off. And we'll see how he goes. He said he's not going to talk about the 50-50-90 stuff anymore, which is probably for the best because he's not there. And it's, you know, it's amazing. You know, even the guy who's as prepared as Kyle and who goes through all that stuff, you know, it's, you even catch a slump. And it's kind of terrifying to see him go through a slump because you're like, oh, no, he, you know, and it's not been like a 2-game thing. It's been 8 or 9, 10 since the All-Star break.
Here's the thing: I'm like hoping it's like, all right, here's your slump.
Get it out of your system
before the playoffs.
Let's get to the yoffs and let's get good Kyle back. And the other thing with the Hawks is Thabo's back soon. They're finally listening on the injury reports. They used to just kind of like send it out, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But he was just inactive.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. No, yeah, everybody forgets about
that. You'd see him on the bench like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we have that guy. And it's, well, I think Bubba rotate him back in. And
I think by the end of the West Coast road trip,
he'll be back. I think he'll be back when we get back from the West Coast.
Yeah, I think he'll be back.
We'll like probably rest him for that. You know,
once we get back for that.
It'll be interesting.
Which will be a big...
Thabo, yeah, because Baze is playing a lot, and I like Baze, but he...
Thabo's better.
When you put, well, the thing about Baze is when you put... He's good for, like, a one night, but we saw it against Philly. When he has to play a lot of minutes in back-to-back nights, he's just... Because he plays so hard, you can tell he starts having to use his legs up a little more in that second game. His shot starts to waver a little bit. He has to push it a little more. His burst at the rim isn't there, so he kind of has to toss it. So I think it'll be good to get Baze back to a shorter minutes per game. But we did learn that he can play those crunch time minutes if we need him.
Yeah.
Thabo's having a rough shooting night. We can throw Baze in. But that'll be interesting.
Or if you just need another, you know,
defensive
energy.
Defender.
Yeah, you can put, I mean, now you can put, you know,
press
like,
up on him.
And
you got
out there.
I mean, you have three. Yeah, you have three guys that can defend wing players, which the Hawks had one last year. So this is an improvement.
Yeah,
it's good. The playoffs are gonna be fun this year. I think we were all worried about the Eastern Conference playoffs coming in, but I think at this point you have six teams that at least will create interesting second round series. Although Washington, Chicago, and Milwaukee are on the bottom end of that list.
I think Milwaukee, if they end up at 6 and they get like a good, like if they get like Cavs, like if Cavs falls
Milwaukee,
to 3, I think that could be a sneaky good, really good series.
Cavs, Milwaukee plays tough. Yeah, that would be fun. I think.
And they're not really good at offense, but
Milwaukee,
Cleveland's not a great defensive team.
I think Milwaukee gives the Bulls problems.
I think Milwaukee could beat the Bulls at this point.
Yeah, they really could. I mean, Milwaukee gives. They give a lot of those teams in the middle of the East some issues just because, I mean, they're just. Stupid long and like, I don't know how much I trust MCW in the playoffs and Tyler Ennis and or you know those guys, but it's like they'll give some games out. It's gonna be you're gonna be in a 6-game series if you land Milwaukee, I think. And then obviously the West we all knew was gonna be a ton of fun. And now that it's kind of rounding in the shape, you look at those matchups and just all the way down the list, you're like, yes, sign me up.
And OKC's finally, you know, in there, like, actually in the 8 spot,
yeah.
where they've been trailing for
so
long,
so it's definitely... It's like, oh, we could get Golden State OKC? Yes, please.
This is sort of... It seems unfair.
It really... Like, honestly... I feel bad for Golden State.
You're Golden State and you have to draw Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Ramla.
That sucks. That just sucks. Ugh. I think that's about all we got.
Yeah.
Final thoughts? Anything? Woo, we ran long.
How long has we ran long?
Strong 120.
Alright. We'll wrap this up here. Final thoughts?
Yeah. You got anything of note?
Please, for God's sakes, Indiana, get out of the 8 spot.
That's
you
all
can,
I
you
need.
Can take, you can take 9, you can tank, you can take 7. For all I care, you can get hot and take 6. I don't care. I just don't want a third straight
playoffs. I can't
Hawks
do
Pacers.
It. I just won't. I refuse. I'm boycotting.
Like, I love David West. He's really good post-game guy.
Best post-game guy I've ever talked to in the playoffs.
I don't want to see David West up.
No! Talking about... Because here's the thing that... I think this is my favorite thing the Pacers do, is when they lose, they just send David West out there by himself.
Yeah.
Go get him. And he's great. Vogel comes out, does his mumbly thing, and then David West comes out and just holds court for like 20 minutes and is honest about everything and gives good quotes. But it's like, where's Roy? Where's Paul?
You know, but it's not like
they just sacrifice.
If someone wanted to get those guys, you have to go get them. You're going to miss all
everybody
much.
Else.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, it's kind of genius, but you know, shout out to David West for taking those for the team. But yeah, no, I agree.
Give me Al Jefferson.
I'll take it.
Or Lance Stevenson.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Or Dwayne Wade.
Anybody but the Pacers. So.
I'll take Marcus Smart, too. I don't care. Just
anybody with Pacers. That'll do it for us. Should be a fun stretch run to the season. I think you're going to see the top of the East will kind of coast it in. Hawks, Cavs, going to kind of work their kinks out, coast it in. Hawks are resting people,
yeah.
Losing to the Sixers. So it's going to be interesting.
Rest for rotation players.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
That'll do it. And... But it's going to be, you know, the West is going to be just a brutal stretch run, especially New Orleans and OKC. And don't forget about San Antonio.
Yeah.
Because they're there and they're coming. We're going to get Spurs Grizz in that first round. Oh, it's going to be a bloodbath. I know. And the funniest thing is, I think my favorite thing is Matt Moore knows it's coming. And he does not want Grizz Spurs. Matt Moore would take anyone else. He'll take the Pepto whiskey again. He just can't do it. Because he hates Spurs fans so much. And if they lose to the Spurs, he's never going to hear the end of it. From especially like Matt Tynan. They're just going to kill him forever. So pray
at
for
least,
Matt Moore.
At least with us getting Pacers, we, you know, most Pacer fans I interact with are relatively nice.
Literally everyone at the bottom of the East, like, except for some Heat fans. Like those
Boston
are
fans aren't bottom of the East. You may want to retract that statement.
Oh. Yeah, but I like a lot. Most of the Boston fans I interact with, I like with. Like Jack and those guys. But, no, I agree.
Remember, I have experiences with making fun of Rajon Rondo.
Well, yeah, don't do that in the ESPN 5-on-5, or you'll get
NBA
rank or whatever.
NBA rank. I said, yeah, 23 is good for him. You know, it's a good spot.
How dare you say that about the 15th best point guard in the NBA? Yeah, I said it. Average-ass point guard, Rajon Rondo. Come on.
Yeah.
Late heat from Robbie.
Bring it.
But, yeah. So, playoffs should be fun. We'll be back, hopefully, in the next week or so to talk more about whatever the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Hopefully, Russ keeps doing stupid things.
If Russ ascends to basketball heaven with his 18th straight triple-double by the end of the season, we'll
it's going to happen. It's going to be amazing. Somebody said, like, what if Russ just does this forever? Like,
what if KD just comes back and he just keeps doing this?
What if, like, Russ just scores 30 and has, like, averages, like, 30, 12, and 14 forever? It's crazy, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Like, I can totally see him signing with the Lakers in a couple years with no one else on that team.
And he's just going to be sitting there.
And averaging a triple-double for a season in L.A. Book it. Book it. KD bounces.
That's actually the only, now that I think about it, that's the only, like, I hated the idea of him going to
I
like
want it so bad
that,
now.
That.
It's going to have Kobe's gone. They fuck up a draft or two, which is totally possible. And we end up just with Russ out there with Swaggy P in his eighth year in L.A. averaging a 30-point triple-double. It's going to happen. Oh, man, I'm excited about that. But anyway, thanks for listening. If you've made it this far, I don't know how. But anyway.
Good on you.
Yeah. We'll be back at a later date, and we'll try to be better next time. Thanks for listening.